move on to our last agenda item, which is a North Coast Board 2017 priority project discussion.
I'll come back.
Do we need a break?
Anybody want to take a 5-minute break? How about we just take a 5-minute break and get fresh, and then this is our last item of the day.
All right, St. John. Afternoon, Chairman Norrie, members of the board, Matt St. John. This item is a discussion of 2017 work plan and priority projects for this calendar year and beyond. Sorry, this is finicky. Do you mind advancing for me? Can you go back one? So the purpose of this agenda item is to give you an overview of our 2017 work plan, focusing on our priority projects. But primarily, it's intended to facilitate a discussion between me and Shinrei and board members, as well as getting public input on our priorities for this calendar year and looking ahead to the coming years. Next slide. I will give a very brief look at our organizational structure, breakdown of our staff funding, and then talk about, by program area, our programmatic work commitments, and then identify our priority projects for this calendar year. Included in your agenda package as an attachment to the Executive Officer's Summary Report is a list of the priority projects, many of which I'll be speaking to in my staff presentation. So our organization, we have currently a total of just under 84 positions. It's actually 84 bodies, but couple of part-time positions, so 84 authorized positions. In addition, we have 5 contract employees, so a total of 89 positions for our office. We currently have 6 vacancies that we're working on filling. Most of these are the new cannabis program positions. Three of those new positions have been filled. Kason Grady is the new supervisor. I mentioned earlier Stormer Filer is the new enforcement specialist, and we have a new engineering geologist that has accepted a position, and we have a start date for. But that leaves a couple of positions which we're still in the interview process. So our organizational structure, I'm not showing you the whole org chart, but we're divided into 3 different divisions. Each of the 3 divisions has 3 technical units, so a total of 9 technical units, 1 administrative support unit. And then somewhat unique to our region and was one of the key components of the reorganization that we did is we have 5 specialist positions. So that's Clayton Krager as our watershed stewardship specialist, Brian McFadden as our flow and riparian specialist, Jeremiah Puget as our groundwater specialist, Jonathan Wormerdam as our restoration specialist, and now with the recent hire of Stormer Filer as our enforcement specialist. And so those specialists coincide with the 5 strategic strategic directions, strategic initiatives that we updated the board on in December 2015 when we had a whole strategic planning discussion. So I'm not going to go over that.
So Matt, just while you've got this up there, so I mean, I don't. This isn't a criticism; it's an observation. But you know, you've got 95 positions under you, and today we heard that there's only 3 for the ag program. How over time did these positions or these subject areas get allocated bodies? You know?
Well, it's so we are funded by program area. It's based on funding that we receive through programs that have fees. That the fees determine the amount of funding that goes to any individual program, and there's a process that the state can go through to try to get additional funding, but that requires putting together a proposal to the Department of Finance, ultimately then approved by the governor's office. So it's over time we get new funding by doing these budget change proposals. It's usually a 2-year time frame to get new funding. And as we talked about in our ag program, there have been efforts over the last couple of years to try to get additional funding for ag. And I mean, just honestly, the state has not been successful in getting approval for additional funding. So what this chart shows is the funding levels for the different program areas that are shown along the left-hand side. It identifies the number of authorized positions for each program, and then the percentage that funding represents. So as an example, in our forest lands program, we have 17.1 authorized positions, and that represents just over 20% of our total staffing.
Right, and so, I mean, it's a fifth of your staffing.
Is on our
and team. Given the sea change in forest ownership and forest management, is this formula still working for you? I mean, do you need that many people in forest land section?
Absolutely. We are, all those staff, because remember this is both private timber, industrial timber lands, as well as the non-TMPs, and our U.S. Forest Service program is funded with that funding stream.
So even if you could just, arbitrarily shift things up, you'd still leave forest lands with one-fifth of your personnel in that slot? I mean, you know, again, I'm just thinking, well, you know, going through the 90s and going through the 2000s when there was so much turmoil and so much going on with a different set of landowners, I'm talking about the whole region. You know, is that a holdover? Is this distribution of your personnel allocation, is this a legacy from, you know, 20 years ago? And are other programs that today, you know, might, like cannabis is getting filled because
So cannabis is staffing up. When I showed this chart to you in December 2015, we had 4 cannabis staff, and so that's an example where we went to the Department of Finance along with the State Board, and we ended up with 9 additional. So, you know, part of my point in showing this slide is to say that we don't have a lot of flexibility in terms of doing what you're asking, of taking allocated resources from one program and saying, no, Fred, you're no longer going to be doing forest lands. You need to take 4 of your staff and do it in a dairy program or ag lands. The state does not look favorably on doing that. Within program areas, we do have discretion. So I'll talk quite a bit towards the end of the presentation in planning. I mean, that's a big category, and we have a fair amount of discretion of where we focus our planning dollars and what are going to be the priority projects.
So how many people there are unrestricted that you could move if you had to?
Not from one program source to another.
All of those are restricted within a program area?
Correct.
Yeah.
Wow. So even like forest lands to non-point source, which...
There's a little bit of slop in forest lands, I will be honest. Our dairy, you won't see dairies up there, And that's because we don't have dedicated funding for dairies, but we have a dairy program, and in fact it receives fees. But so we do borrow from our forest program to fund our dairy program. But that's kind of an exception.
Correct me, or make sure I understand this. I thought on the forest lands, because it's a permit fee-driven program, that we subsidize all the Forest Service out of these positions. We're not funded to review the Forest Service. Is that correct?
Our forest lands program goes to both private timber and our Forest Service federal lands program. And in fact, that's not funded by permit fees, it's funded by the timber tax. But those, that forest lands category is both private and federal lands.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's 100% timber tax?
It's 100% timber tax, yep. Our restoration specialist, Jonathan, he's funded under the forest, into that forest lands category, and so he's doing promoting restoration projects, large woody debris. So it's a big category. It's not just timber harvest plan review to get to your question, Greg. Why don't I move on?
Yeah, I do want to say less than 3 months ago, I got a different answer twice, and I don't know who it's from now. So I will probably send you an email confirming this, and you can double check it just to satisfy my concern.
I'd be happy to.
And I'm happy at the answer, don't get me wrong.
So the next couple of slides, I'm going to walk through our various programs and speak to our programmatic commitments and then highlight some of our priorities for this calendar year. So first is our point source and groundwater programs. So this includes a variety of programs, which I sometimes refer to as our core regulatory programs. That includes wastewater, recycled water, stormwater, solid waste, groundwater site cleanup. Those are dedicated funding for those specific facilities and programs, and we really do not have a lot of flexibility to move funding around among those different programs. And it constitutes a lot of the work that we do day in and day out. I mean, that's pretty much one whole division, so about a third of our technical staff. Currently, we're working at one stage or another of developing a total of 22 wastewater and solid waste permits. As these are in various stages of development. Some we've just asked for a report of waste discharge from the dischargers. Some we've received the report of waste discharge and we're in permit development. There's some that are in CEQA review. But leave it to say that we're currently working on a total of 22 wastewater solid waste permits. Of those 22, we're kind of looking into the horizon, and we're planning that about 16 of those facilities will come to the board for your consideration in 2017. We've identified here a couple of priority permits out of that 16. And I mean, all of these facilities are priorities in a certain respect, but we've identified ones that are priorities based on the age of the existing permit or risk to water quality. Next slide. In the non-point source world, this includes the private industrial timber, U.S. Forest Service, county roads, the agricultural lands program that you heard about this morning, the dairy program, the cannabis program, and our 401 dredge and fill program.
Ben, can I ask you a question?
You may.
When we passed the Forest Service regs, there was a desire. There were combined regions in the Forest Service, and some of those are quite distinct from a biological standpoint, elevation, soils, everything else. You know, I thought we were going to try and get some of those looked at separately. We would have the big ones plus a forest permit. And are we making any progress on that, or are there discussions on that, or is that included in this?
So let me make sure I understand. So we have a one U.S. Forest Service waiver that addresses all of the forests.
Right.
And that there has been some discussion about the potential benefit of having a forest-specific waiver. Is that what you're asking?
Well,
subcomponent for different forests.
Subcomponents of it.
Yeah.
That would reflect different conditions on the ground.
Uh-huh. So we are not actively developing something. We would do that the next time that the Forest Service waiver comes to the board, would be the way that we've been thinking about it. We have annual meetings with each of the forests, with all of the forests, where we come together with all the forests, and the next meeting is later this month, in a couple weeks actually. And so that's a topic that's on the agenda.
Oh, okay, good, because I think the last time I heard this conversation, there was the thought if we didn't break it up, that it's too much to do with the big one, and then it doesn't happen. So anything we can do to move up that approach, I think, would be wise.
Okay. Well, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts of what you see are the advantages to doing that the single permit structure doesn't afford.
There was a board conversation. I mean, it wasn't me. It was two,
yeah.
I believe, a total of three board members.
Uh-huh.
Discussed the fact that there's huge differences between the forests,
right.
And that theoretically affects what the regulations ought to be or could be. And so therefore, if we had to take the existing one, keep it, and then have anything special really amended into it on one of the sub-forests, that would be advancing it. I mean, you started off with, we did it, then the state board was going to do a statewide permit, and that blew up. So they threw it back to the regional boards, and it's 40% of our region. We did it. It's a lot of territory for a single permit.
Yeah.
And
I think that we need to have the conversation with the forest to get the input.
Yeah,
from them
to
see whether they agree that that's needed, or whether the current permit structure gives them the flexibility that they would.
I think it'd be good to report back to us, so we keep board expectations and staff approaches consistent.
Okay. We will definitely, I can include in an EO report in May or June on the outcome of that annual meeting with the Forest Service.
And what are the topics that I mean?
Well, the one that John just brought up is one that I'll make sure that Fred puts on the agenda.
Don't tell us clear cutting to me.
We're just putting the agenda together now. It's going to include certainly some discussion of grazing requirements, because you'll recall that the new U.S. Forest Service waiver has significantly more requirements related to monitoring us on grazing lands. And so that's a big deal for the forests. And so one of the items will be hearing from them on their annual grazing monitoring plans.
And not that I don't want the 30-second answer, but one of the discussions we had in length with the Karuk tribe was it the King's Fire salvage operation?
West Side,
right? Has that been resolved with us?
Well, it has been permitted.
It has. Okay, that's what. Thank you. That's all.
Project.
That's good.
Yeah.
Been logged too.
So, just my curiosity, what kind of people from the Forest Service attend that meeting? Is it the supervisors come and meet with you?
It's been a couple of years since I've attended one of the annual meetings, but yes, the last one that I attended, the Shasta Trinity National Forest Supervisor was there. But so it's usually the But that's the, it's typically, it's their deputies.
Their deputies, okay.
So within the non-point source programs, in addition to just implementing and doing the day-to-day work to implement these programs, there's a couple of permits that we're actively working on to develop. The first listed there is Green Diamond South Fork Elk River Management Plan. As you'll recall, that's one of the action items under the Elk River TMDL. And we are currently planning to bring that to the board for your consideration later this summer or fall. You heard from Sherry in last December on the renewal of the dairy waiver, and her, and at that time she reported that we're undergoing a process to revise our general dairy order. You heard this morning about the development of our vineyards and orchards general order, and then you've also heard that we're working closely with State Board as they work on developing a statewide general order for cannabis. Our Rebecca's unit, as well as some staff in Alita's unit, are working on TMDL implementation throughout the region. We have various TMDLs that we're actively working on implementation on. Ones that are of particular focus for us in this calendar year, again, will be the renewal of the Scott and Shasta River TMDL conditional waivers. We intend to bring that to you, as you heard earlier today, for your consideration in October. Klamath River TMDLs, you heard again about the renewal of the MOU that we have with ODEQ and US EPA Regions 9 and 10, as well as working on the Watershed Stewardship Framework that Mike Hyatt reported on. And then we're also, and it's related to the Klamath River TMDL, we're working to support the State Board on their efforts on the 401 water quality certification associated with the dam removal project. So I can't underestimate what a big workload all of that work is in the Klamath River Basin. And mostly it's being done by Mr. Clayton Krager, so he's the right man for the job, but it's a lot. And then finally, there's the Elk River, and we are continuing to work hard on Elk River stewardship and the Elk River recovery assessment, and as required under the TMDL action plan, we intend to bring an update to you this spring or early summer. So that brings us to planning-related projects. The listed here are the two projects that will be brought to the board this calendar year. At long last, the Russian River Indicator Bacteria Pathogens TMDL will be going back out for public review in July, in time for an August workshop before the board, and then hearings were in December of this year. The Laguna de Santa Rosa Water Quality Credit Trading Program, this is the same as what we also have referred to as the Nutrient Offset Program. This is kind of early implementation for the Laguna TMDL, and we'll be putting that out for public review, having a workshop for you in May, and then bringing that to the board for hearing in August. So in addition to these, those two projects, we're actively working on seven other high-priority planning projects that were part of the 2015 Triennial Review Priority Project List, and I'm going to just walk through quickly as a reminder to you what this is a list of priority projects that the board approved in 2015. These are projects that would be revisions to our basin plan. Couple of them have been completed. One is planned for adoption this year, and then the rest are all in development. So the ones that are completed are some of our water quality objectives, That was the chemical constituents objective and the groundwater toxicity objective and the DO objective. Those are all done. They've been approved by US EPA. Done deal. In addition, concurrent with those projects, we did the editorial amendment, you'll recall, for chapters 3 and 6 of the Basin Plan. And those don't require EPA approval, but they have been approved by the Office of Administrative Law. The Russian River TMDL I mentioned, we'll be bringing to you before the end of the calendar year. And then the rest of the projects are all, we're working on all of them, and are in various stages of development. That includes the ocean beaches, bacteria TMDL, the TMDL development for the Laguna de Santa Rosa, that's addressing sediment, temperature, dissolved oxygen, and nutrients. There's the developing exemption criteria for the seasonal discharge prohibition project, and that's in process, in development. I'm just going to go through this whole list.
I had one question.
Okay.
You're going to go through the list?
I was just going to go through the list, and then I expect there would be questions about for some more details, and I'm happy to give that detail. Do you want to go ahead and ask now, John?
Oh, just the ocean beaches. If you look statewide, we're the leader in the most polluted beaches. On 3 or 4 beaches, I mean, we're in the top 5. And that's a terrible situation. Now, there's a lot of reason to believe the fecal coliform counts are non-human, but we really need to get a handle on it, because if you're reading a statewide thing, and I'm starting to pick it up, especially from statewide people, why are your beaches so polluted up there? So I think it's a great question, and I hope that has the priority, because from on the surface, it would appear to be a fairly serious public health problem, and we don't have a handle on it. So I just want to keep that as on the front burner, because I think it will get resolved, as I said a lot, that the coliform may very, our fecal coliform may very well be coming from cattle or horses,
yeah, so
or wild animals, but it may be coming off septic tanks off those hills that are not hooked up to the water district. So it's just that the numbers are so bad that I think we need to keep it moving.
And we absolutely are. It's one of the projects, or Steve Butkus, who was the lead in developing the Russian River pathogen TMDL, this is his project. He's done many pathogen TMDLs in his career, and so we're working hard at it. We are using a reference beach approach. So we have contracts with Sonoma County and Humboldt County Public Health Departments using the Bactroides. Jennifer Cole and the Baykeeper is also helping us with monitoring in the Humboldt Bay area. So that project is moving along nicely.
Okay, good.
I have a question on that.
Yeah.
Are birds the source, migrating birds or residential birds, are they a source of that?
So the results are still too early to know to what level that they're a source, but I can assure you that they are one of the sources. In the Russian River TMDL, there's definitely indication that birds are part of one source. They're not the whole source.
A person I know working in Novato at the landfill, creating compost, manufacturing compost from green waste, they had a load that was red flagged because of the fecal coliform, and they found that they had to tarp it. Keep the seedlings off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the remediation.
So we can go to the next slide. We're making progress on the developing flow objectives for the Navarro River. Brian McFadden is our lead staff on that. We just got a RFP out on the streets for some technical, you know, support for that project. The ONRW project, we are making making some progress. Certainly, we kind of hit a snag, as the board knows, in some of the rollout with the Smith River community. That caused us to kind of rethink our approach, and we're now kind of working on a two-phase approach. The first would involve doing a basin plan amendment with identifying what an ONRW is, really defining the regulatory implications of an ONRW. That would be the phase one of the basin plan amendment. And then subsequently, we would look at specific water body designations.
So Matt, what I would ask, because this board has never been given that, but before you guys get too far down the road, you know, have a presentation to this board of what is the ONRW, how is it implemented, how does it interface with other existing regulations, if it does. I'd like to have a discussion here before, one, you put too much more energy into it, or certainly before we do any kind of public rollout again. We can avoid what happened the last time, I think, if we approach it differently, and this is what I'm suggesting how to approach it. But, you know, I was under the impression that this board is going to be given a chance to ask questions and have an understanding of what the program meant. So I'm formally asking you to put that on your list.
Well, it is on the list. The intention was to, as part of the work going into what would be the 2018 triennial review, to develop a staff report that documents the status of all of these projects, including the ONRW project. What I'm hearing from you is that you're asking for a specific information item just on the status of the research that we've done to date.
One of the questions that I was hit with when we had the dust up, you know, people didn't fully understand how this might integrate with existing regulatory statutes or might interfere with existing statutes. This is an overlay. It's essentially a planning overlay onto a whole bunch of other overlays. And to one of the questions is the board member, I'd like when people ask me, is how does this fit into that matrix of other existing regulatory overlays?
Other tools
that people are dealing with. So that's really what I'm after.
So that's what the phase one would document, what that is, and actually as a basin plan amendment. But we can absolutely, before we're anywhere near putting something out for public review, we can have an information item that describes that.
I'm not sure that's necessary. What I thought happened was we put a halt on it. It was going all over the place. And we said we'd take it up in the triennial review, including the wisdom of proceeding forward at all. And so that staff may get some materials for the triennial review, but that really the whole program is going to be reviewed. When do we want it? Do we need it? Is it helpful? And is it worth the resources? And then have that come up in the triennial review. And if the board's answer was yes, then of course we would have to proceed to whatever we do, and right now it's a stepped implementation. But I thought the whole thing was pretty withdrawn, saying let's cool our jets a little bit, take it back up at the triennial review, and that's where we...
And that's what I probably didn't explain. That's, we were going to describe that in a staff report that would be brought to you as a triennial review before moving forward on an actual basin plan amendment.
Good, because the way you described it, it was sort of like it was moving, and I heard it the same way I believe Board Member Musti did.
Okay, I apologize.
It was handled a little different.
Yep. Thank you for pushing for the clarification. Any more questions on that? Should we move on? So then the last two projects that were on the triennial review were the development of the groundwater protection policy. Last year, you got a pretty comprehensive update from Jeremiah Puget on the status of that project, and that should be coming. We'll have another update for you in 6 to 9 months or so. And then the last project is the development of a policy to address the effects of climate change. And the next step will be an all-day workshop with the board, addressing kind of by topic area different considerations with regard to the impacts of climate change. And at this time, our plan is to bring that all-day workshop to the board sometime in the winter of 2018. So it'll be about a year from now.
Matt, are there any other regions that are addressing climate change implications?
There are, and the state board just on Tuesday adopted a resolution, a climate change resolution, and it includes some direction to the state and regional boards. It addresses drinking water, water supply, water quality. There are a couple other regions that have developed climate protection strategies. Some boards have endorsed that via a resolution. I think some are actually in the works to develop a basin plan amendment, which is what we have intended. And our full intent will be to learn from and build on the work of the other regions and the state board.
I just want to say that's probably where we are realistically, but it's, and I think my memory's faint because I think it's really 4 years, but it's been 3 years trying to schedule a basic conference. Then we were going to have a follow-up where we would set a policy direction. And when we started, I mean, we now can get the benefit of all the regional boards, but I heard them talking about a year after we started talking about it, and they didn't. So I do want to say, I don't understand what has been the challenge to holding a conference on climate change.
I can say Elk River has been the challenge. It's it's the same staff working on it, and we've had to make priorities at all costs.
Well, getting back a little bit to last year, and I want last year gone. These things, we set a date and it keeps getting postponed, and I do understand the problems of Elk, but it looks like it's postponed still another year. And I just get up when we can't do a simple thing for 3 or 4 years, I begin to question. Maybe we're investing too much time in the conference. I mean, scale it down. But I don't want to go out four or five years just to get started. And that's sort of where we are. I don't believe that was waived off. I think that was waived off to this year. And then now it's waived off to the following year. I just want to say it's very frustrating. Start off ahead, have a good program, and then North Coast, I love my work, but sometimes we take 2 to 3 times as long as anybody else to do it. And so I think we need to look at what's causing the logjam. That's all.
So that's exactly why we're having this item, is to talk about prioritization. And the reason I showed the bar chart of staffing is, John, you're rolling your eyes, but it's just a reality. We can't create, I mean, we do have to make choices, and it's the same staff in our basin planning unit. And Elk River TMDL was a priority, Russian River TMDL is a priority, these other basin plan amendments are a priority, and we can't do it all.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm not going to discuss it in the meeting. I will discuss it with you privately. Outside of it, I do believe there are other options, and you are right, we have to go through setting the priorities. Triennial review is very important. I'm enthused that we have that opportunity, and I want to continue with that.
Okay.
But I think I will also want to discuss.
I'm happy to talk about it with you individually offline, and not to belabor it, but I'm looking for your input on prioritization. And if I'm told one thing is you would ask us to reprioritize, then I will ask my staff to do that. But without that direct input, we need to proceed working on the things that we're working on. And right now, that doesn't include doing a lot of work on the climate protection strategy. So just to wrap up the presentation, then we can have more discussion. Next slide, please. There's some other priority work that kind of falls out of these categories of programmatic work and triennial review. There's the work on the governor's California Water Action Plan. There were a total of five watersheds in the state where targeted for doing flow studies to ultimately develop flow objectives. Three of those are in the North Coast region. Our staff are not in the lead on any of these projects, but we're working very closely with the Division of Water Rights and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife on these three study flow studies in the South Fork Eel, the Shasta River, and Mark Rust Creek.
And if I could ask a question, perhaps it's a combo, but you have fish and game canoe stream flow studies, the state board can do it, we have authority to do it, plus you have the expedited stream flows for cannabis, plus you have, of course, the water rights permit system. Is this a combination of those, or is there one of those agencies taking the lead on this? Because otherwise it's very confusing to board members. But when the public asks me, stream flows, oh, you're doing it? I want to know. I think it's fish and game and the state board is we're cooperating. Who's really doing this?
On these three, I think it's Fish and Wildlife is the lead, I believe, on the South Fork Eel and Mark West Creek, and State Board is the lead on the Shasta River.
Okay.
Because this board adopted, as the 2015 triennial review, the Navarro River. We are the lead for the Navarro River.
Okay. So is that going to be on the triennial review?
Well, I just reported on it. It is on the triennial review.
Yeah, okay, great. That's fine.
So, Matt, one thing in our package, you outlined in our package, one of the priorities you mentioned that you didn't mention in your slideshow was the Green Diamond WDR review. So that will be coming to
us. No, it's under
the TMDL. You had Elk River under TMDL implementation, and I realize that elk is becoming a four-letter word for everybody. We're pretty beat up on it, but we are going to go forward with the Green Diamond WDR too, right?
So it's on the non-point source programs slide under the permits under development, Green Diamond resource.
Got it. Okay, good. I guess we skipped over it, so fine.
Yeah. So another kind of high priority work is we had an EO report article that we're updating our 303D list. The request for submission of data is out. That data should be coming in May. And Catherine Carter of our staff will be working on updating the 303D list and the associated integrated report. And that's scheduled to come to you in 2018. We're doing our surface water ambient monitoring programs, doing a lot of work. We mentioned the work in Smith River as one example. There was discussion in the forum about Willow Creek as one example. We're putting a lot of effort into helping small disadvantaged communities, working with the Division of Financial Assistance to find funding for infrastructure projects. These are large, primarily wastewater projects. Many of them are septic to sewer projects, as well as some stormwater projects. And then last but not least, we regularly, as part of all of our programs, work on enforcement cases. It's a big workload, much of which goes on behind the scenes, and only a small portion of which the board actually sees when enforcement cases actually come come to you, but it also represents a big part of what we do on a daily basis. Okay, so thank you for that overview, and now this, and there was some great dialogue throughout, but I'm happy to take any more questions or comments from you, and then maybe folks from the public as well.
I have one speaker card too for Felice. Okay. Why don't we take that, and then we'll do it. Go ahead, Felice.
Sounds great. Felice Pace, North Kirkwood Chapter of the Sierra Club Water Chair. First of all, I want to say I'm tremendously appreciative of staff a lot of the time. Maybe you guys don't always hear that because I tend to focus on on the issues where I'm not happy. But I am very happy. For example, we have two industrial recreation developments over in the Scott River Valley, for example, that we're dealing with. And Mr. O'Connor has been working on those, and he is tremendous. The word tremendous. I mean, in terms of just being technical expertise, knowing what he's doing, and just diplomatic, and just, you know, I can't. One of the better public servants I've met. Number two, you know, I want to observe that we got lots of people staffing now in TMDLs. I take some responsibility for that. I was one of the people that sued you. Back a whole bunch of years ago to get the TMDLs going. And the only reason I brought that up is because of the ag staff thing. You know, we got one person, you know, working on a lot of that. And probably, I bet if I went and looked statewide, I know where the people would be. They'd be over in the Central Valley. And, you know, and that doesn't mean I'm going to file a lawsuit on the Smith River Plain, but I probably ought to. The Forest Service one or many permits, because I've worked so many years on Forest Service stuff, comment on that. I'll bet the Forest Service wouldn't like that, and where that's coming from is we got those forests over in the Modoc and the Cascades. It's a different scene over there, and the water quality issues are not the same, and that might make some sense to have a different scheme there, but in terms of the Klamath Mountains and the Coast Ranges, it's very similar. We could argue about who's got the biggest landslide rates, you know, the Coast Range, Franciscan, or the Klamath Mountains. Outstanding natural resource river has no, I'm against it. The reason I'm against it, it is a waste of time. It has no regulatory impact at all. And I've been against it from when I'm a member of Friends of Del Norte, and Friends of Del Norte came up with it. I've been against, they know I'm against it because of that reason. It's, we got plenty of protection up there, in my opinion. When I look at the list, you know, there's something that wasn't addressed that I have a question on. Local area in planning. You know, and it's a question of maybe we need a principle, okay? Should where we put our resources reflect where we have the greatest impact to beneficial uses, or should it reflect something else? I mean, I'm into climate. I believe in climate change, but I'm not sure that we should be working on climate change when we have problems creating permits for some things that really need permits to guide folks, you know, along the way while protecting the resources. And so local area management plans for counties of Sonoma, Humboldt, and Mendocino. I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound like anything that...
part of the septic requirements. It's out of the state septic requirements, Felice. So the Yarowee County was required to come up and revise their septic plans. They are the implementing agency, so they bring those to us for final approval.
Okay, so yeah. They have to be
fairly important.
Yeah. Okay. Development of criteria for exemption from seasonal discharge programs. Maybe I'm wrong, but that sounds to me like something that dischargers would like. You know, it's kind of like, it reminds me of winter ops. When we started with winter ops, it was these long periods in the winter that were dry that we exempted. Now, 72 hours and you go back in, even though it's still muddy, and you got 4 inches of rain the day before, or 2 days before. So I'm not sure that these planning priorities in particular reflect where our beneficial uses are most impacted. And I'm, all I'm doing is suggesting to you that that might be a way of evaluating.
And I'll invite you again, Fouché, to come in as you do and join within the process. The triennial review is coming up. So we'll look forward to hearing from you there as well.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming again. Okay, bring it back to discussion then. Any discussion around either the map presented or comments that we've had that we haven't addressed yet? We do have priority, the triennial update coming, which for us is a major planning effort to look at this in detail as far as looking what's here, what's potentially coming as well. And that's coming fairly soon.
Coming at the end of this year, early 2018.
Yeah, and I would note as well that we have a kind of glide path out for almost the rest of the year for kind of board agenda items that are coming at us, so I think we're fairly well versed on what's coming. And I feel fairly comfortable with where we're at right now, given the I was looking at the triennial update of where we were, and I look forward to where we're going to go. I know that things get thrown on here. The only real question I had is we do at times have hot potatoes that come out of the blue, and just leaving ourselves some bandwidth to do so. I know that's hard from a planning perspective when you're kind of a wide open throttle, but just that is kind of the way of the world sometimes. Cannabis to me was it's such a big program, and it's such a big animal. I would like to see one very last comment. I would like to see us use our enforcement for other things besides cannabis. And I know that that does happen, but I do believe that there are instances where some well-placed enforcement could be very effective and send a strong message as well. And I think we could probably think about that and not be... I know we do CWICs. I know we have, you know, every EO report we get, clients out. You're right, enforcement is not something that we see in the front of the line all the time. It's usually stuff that works behind the scene. But I think some enforcement that would be a little bit strategic might be smart.
Great. And we're the State Board is updating the enforcement policy, and I've invited Chris Kerrigan and his staff to come, once that policy has been adopted by the State Board, to come and give a little presentation to our board on the revisions to the enforcement policy. And then Shinrei and I are in discussions about using that also as an opportunity to, without talking about specific cases, to tell you about the types of cases that we work on.
Yeah.
And to get some input from the board on your priorities for enforcement.
Yeah, and with Stormer moving into that position, into more of a management side, he's kind of, to me, he seems like the perfect Dick Doug, the guy to get in there and do some of that. It seems to be within his wheelhouse to do that kind of thing. He seems good at it, so it might be a good opportunity to look at that in some depth and see where it's happening. Any other comments?
So can I request a copy of the presentation? That list that you did?
Absolutely. So you mean an electronic copy of the
presentation? Yeah, instead of a PDF or whatever, full size.
Yeah, definitely.
Good.
And I think I'll probably go back to my original request that got more from staff to a climate change conference. I wanted a simple audit based upon, I've been trying to think, it's the Stanford Ocean Group for regional boards on. You want to list the tools you have, but also what you need to look at: are you enforcing coastal regulations properly? And the second thing was a private method of dealing with large-scale fires, so that someone can get a permit relatively quickly. And so those were the two things that drove. We of course got that on the public lands with the Forest Service, but the other one we were. It happened on Forest Service land, and it happened when we had a Forest Service permit before conditional waiver. If that hadn't happened, we would have been in a much bigger mess on the west side. So I want to have some. Those are the two areas I did. And I'll just suggest those, and maybe they'll make the list, and maybe they won't. It was staff that took it to the conference, and then the conference got to having two conferences, and then. From that, we would break out and end up with looking at some of the things I just mentioned, I think it's just simpler to go back. Here's what we want. You can listen on priorities or not.
Any other comments or questions? Ms. Dan.
Thank you. So I found that really the presentation and the list really helpful. I think it's a, given our broad set of authorities and responsibilities, I think it's a pretty good mix of activities. One thing that struck me was the planning list. I know I was part of the board that adopted those priorities in the triennial review, but looking at that list, I thought it's a little ambitious and maybe we could get more done if we prioritized fewer items. So I would urge us all to be thinking about that during the next triennial review and really make some tougher choices and maybe have a shorter list of priorities so we can really have the best impact and not have those staff stretched thin among many priorities. That was kind of the area that jumped out at me as the most ambitious list. It seemed like the other areas looked pretty pretty doable in terms of what's slated for the next year. So that's my takeaway.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Your message is to prioritize our priorities.
Well, I do want to say one of the ways you do that is you put it low on the list, and staff's really looking at the top five, and so you can have something that's important, but maybe not this year, and you just put it down 6, 7, or 8, and maybe we fudged on the top five and got too much in there. I think that might be a great, it was a valid comment.
Okay, great.